I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rules that President Trump does have the authority to send the National Guard into Portland, and Seattle's mayor is using that decision to prostrate himself to the far left ahead of November's election. Also, there was an anarchist book fair in Seattle, and the rules for entry are quite long for a group of anarchist. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Wouldn't that feel good? You could say, wow, I did something good today. I supported good independent reporting. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. No Mariners in the World Series. You know what helped me is I didn't care to begin with. So when they lost last night, I also didn't care. Does that mean?
Ouch.
I'm sorry, you guys. Fine. It would have been fine, but I just don't care. I'm sorry.
It unites the region.
Does it?
It does.
Okay. I do have a show called Undivided, so I apologize. I wish we could have, you know, pulled it off. No, it would have been nice, but, you know. All right. So we have a lot going on. I was just telling Nicole before the show, it really is, I think, good and bad to see so many eyes on what's happening in the Pacific Northwest. It's good for the show because it gives us a lot of content, but it's bad because a lot of what's happening here is deeply embarrassing. So it makes us look insane, which... maybe we are. All right. So first, I think I'm really torn on this, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that indeed President Donald Trump can send National Guard troops into Portland. And the court, so it was a three-judge panel on the court, will probably get sent to the full Ninth Circuit for a review. But it relied on precedent in basically saying that the federal government has the power and a uncontested interest in the protection of federal agents and property and the faithful execution of law. So basically what they said is, yeah, if the president needs to protect federal agents and federal assets, then he has the authority vested in him by Congress, really, to be able to do that. And so they made that ruling. And of course, there was an immediate meltdown from leaders in Portland and here in Washington state, which we'll get to in a moment. But Attorney General Pam Bondi commenting on this, saying today, the Ninth Circuit found that POTUS has the right to deploy the National Guard to Portland, Oregon, where local leaders have failed to keep their citizens safe. This follows hard work by the Justice Department attorneys and helps reaffirm a simple truth. President Trump is the commander in chief. We will continue fighting and winning in court to defend President Trump's agenda. Now, how quickly President Donald Trump might activate the National Guard to send them to the ICE facility in Portland isn't clear. I was speaking to some sources today, and there really isn't a set timeline. The National Guard troops, they were getting ready for a deployment when this court order halted it. And so it certainly would take probably a couple days to get them back up and out to so maybe this weekend, I guess, is what they might be aiming for. But the meltdown over this, look, and you know, I have my disagreements with it, which I'll discuss in a moment because I have certainly a nuanced perspective on this. But I got to play this from Congresswoman Maxine Dexter, Democratic Congresswoman representing the area of the state that includes Portland. Here's what she said.
Maxine Dexter, Oregon's third, checking in after what I would say is an indefensible ruling by the Ninth Circuit that opens the door to National Guard troops being deployed in our peaceful city. Let's just be clear. Portland is not lawless. We have been extraordinary in our resistance to Donald Trump's fairy tale about our city. We have remained peaceful, persistent, and clear that we do not bend the knee to Donald Trump and his wannabe kingmanship. And we will continue to be so. This ruling must be challenged, and we must remain steadfast in our peaceful resistance to Donald Trump, the tyranny he is trying to take onto our cities and across this country, and what I would say is an extraordinarily dangerous precedent by militarizing our city and moving towards a dictatorship.
Okay, so you can disagree with the deployment of the National Guard, but half of what she said there is just a lie. It's just a lie. And her whole assertion, we're not going to bend the knee to Donald Trump. No, you bend the knee to far left anarchists and to Antifa and to people who perpetrate acts of political violence in pursuit of your ideology. That's who you bend the knee to. It's very clear. But a couple of the things she said there, it's just demonstrably false. The idea that Portland is peaceful. It's not peaceful. That's absolutely ridiculous. And you can say, hey, you know, yeah, there's a problem outside the ICE facility. It's been going on for like 4.5 months, and it's an unacceptable situation. But, you know, outside that, there isn't some sort of widespread emergency that we need the federal government to respond to. Like, use some nuance. But that shows how little she thinks of her constituents, that she would say that that's peaceful. That's just ridiculous. And then to her claim that Portland's not lawless, agree to disagree. As I said, when I went down to Portland, you know, absent this situation outside the ICE facility, which is 2 miles from downtown, the real war zone and lawlessness in Portland is downtown Portland. Now, I think a lot of people could make a compelling argument that you absolutely need help from the feds in downtown Portland. It is a cesspool. It is, you know, totally devoid of any, you know, productive human atmosphere. I mean, it's like a ghost town. And so there's these two separate issues here. I am so sick of Portland leaders and Oregon leaders claiming that their city's doing just fine. That's just not true. It's just not true. The homeless crisis, the crime crisis, the drug crisis. You have blocks and blocks and blocks of boarded up storefronts in downtown Portland. It is far worse there than Seattle. And you know how I feel about the situation in downtown Seattle. Downtown Portland needs all the help it can get. They should be begging the federal government to send extra FBI agents, extra DEA agents, extra ATF agents, and any assistance whatsoever to try to get downtown Portland back on its feet. So I just can't take anyone seriously, even if, let's say, even if Oregon and Democrats had some reasonable arguments to be made about the deployment of National Guard troops. Like, I'd totally be willing to have that conversation and entertain some of that. But when you have people who say it's not lawless and it's peaceful in Oregon, then automatically I'm going to dismiss every other thing they say after that because they're just liars. They're absolute liars and they think so little of their constituency. So before I get to Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell's immediate response to what's happening in Portland, as I've said many times on this show, and I hope you're listening, Seattle Times, because you frequently mischaracterize my opinions and don't actually watch my show, and you've mischaracterized my opinion on this, I do not support National Guard deployment in a broader law enforcement capacity, period. I don't, because I think it's a slippery slope, and I don't want a Democratic president deploying the National Guard to, you know, help boys play in girls' sports and go into girls' dress. I mean, all sorts of nonsense stuff that they would do with that. So I do think there has to be a line there. Now, that being said, as I've also said many times, the federal government, and as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which isn't exactly known for being pro-Trump, as they say here, the president has the right, the power, and a very clear interest in protecting federal agents and assets. So if that's the role the National Guard goes to Portland and plays, and it's very narrow in scope, it's very specific, I don't know how anyone can argue that that's not lawful. The issue I have is I don't know what the National Guard will do that these federal agents on the ground aren't already doing. I mean, you see them, they look like troops for all intents and purposes, and they're out there, they're making arrests, they're clearing the roadway. That's what I need from the federal government. What is the National Guard going to do in that area that these federal protective service agents aren't already doing? That's sort of where I don't understand what's going on there. So that's some information that we'll try to understand by reaching out to the Department of Justice and to the Trump administration. What exactly is the role, is the mission, etc. So all of this is going on. And meanwhile, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, who's in the fight of his life for re-election, is just desperate to distract from his failures and the failures of the city and to try to appeal as much as he can to the far left. So it was like immediate. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals came out with this ruling and he immediately released a video. Here's part of it.
Well, we read the panel of the Ninth Circuit's ruling down in Portland. And so we study that decision to see the implications here for in Seattle. And so we, of course, are encouraging them in Portland to appeal it to the full Ninth Circuit. And in following the law, which we think is really bad policy, and so we're hopeful an appeal will result in a better ruling, common sense would dictate that Trump is overreaching. It's not only mean-spirited, but we believe inconsistent with the values here and inconsistent with the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. So we will fight this tyrannical approach, this federal overreach. We are prepared and we are vocal in our stance on protecting the values here in Seattle against Trump.
Protecting your values. That always bothers me whenever anyone, I don't care who it is, any politician talks about our values. Not everyone shares your freaking values. And not everyone thinks it's mean-spirited to enforce lawful immigration efforts. And that's the thing I always go back to is, why are you mad at Donald Trump when he's enforcing a law that is on the books about people not being able to come to our country illegally? It's because they don't want to come out and say, because it would sound much worse if they came out and said, we don't want there to be borders and people should be able to come here whenever they choose, however they choose, because that just sounds stupid. And then they just blame Trump, and then people buy into that, and they think, oh, that's an easy person to blame, and it doesn't sound as just absolute fringe lunatic. And he says it's mean-spirited. Okay, so enforcing the law is mean-spirited? This is just Bruce Harrell's desperate attempt to try to score points with the far left, because he's running against a socialist, didn't perform well in the primary, election is weeks away. He genuinely, I believe this, he wants Donald Trump here. He needs that. He absolutely wants Donald Trump to deploy the National Guard to Seattle so that he can stand up and be the guy, the champion against the bad orange man. And it's really, there's nothing happening in Seattle. So again, put aside the very clear issues in Seattle with homelessness and drugs and crime, which again, I was actually shocked how much worse things are in Portland than Seattle. I might have some hope for downtown Seattle after seeing downtown Portland. But, you know, I'm not talking about bringing troops here, and I don't think the Trump administration is either, to deal with an issue not related to ICE, immigration, etc. So there's nothing, there's no widespread rioting, there's no situation in Seattle like in Portland. 4.5 months, is it June, July, August, September? Yeah, 4.5 months this has been going on outside the ICE facility in Portland. So there really wouldn't be a reason. Bruce is just manufacturing, because what, we're neighbors with Portland? Oh, our neighbors with Portland, our politics are the same, so we must be next. No, he's focused on Portland, but Bruce Harrell just has to insert himself because he sees this as maybe a way that he can prove that he's, you know, really woke and in line with the socialists and all of this stuff. And then keep in mind, so we've got our fearless mayor, Bruce Harrell, who's orange man bad, orange man bad. And then we also have the law enforcement arm of the mayor's office, which has become the Seattle Police Department, and the Seattle Police Chief, who's also towing that line.
I will do everything in my power, I want to be clear, to protect anyone in Seattle from anyone who comes to this city with the intention to hurt them or inhibit their First Amendment rights. And what that means is, at some point, I will probably go to jail and be in prison. Because we have an administration that has threatened to jail politicians and indeed has done so.
It's so embarrassing. And then he goes and he does an interview with the Seattle Times saying that ICE is making up that there's 1,000% increase in threats and assaults on ICE agents. He says that he thinks it's made up, which is really just a disgusting thing to say, especially when you consider that the far left anarchists and Antifa who are assaulting these ICE agents are the exact same people. Chief Sean Barnes, before you became the chief of police in Seattle, you might need a refresher on this, a little bit of history lesson, because obviously you don't know. Those are the exact same people who were assaulting your officers, who were assaulting the officers you're now responsible for in 2020, who were throwing bricks and rocks at them, who were throwing mortars, who tried to cement them into a police station and light it on fire. The exact same people who burned cop cars in the streets. The exact same people who wish death on your police officers, who scrawled ACAB, all cops are bastards, all over every single precinct in the city. The exact same people who scared 600 of your officers out of the city to go seek employment elsewhere. So you saying that, oh, these attacks aren't happening on ICE agents, whether they'll tell it to you or not, is a slap in the face to every single member of the Seattle Police Department, who went through the hate and the vitriol and the violence at the hands of those far left demonstrators for 4 months in Seattle in the summer of 2020. And before that, during all the May Day riots and the Occupy movement. So shame on you, sir. It's quite disgusting. Now, thankfully, I got endless texts after we talked last week on the show about these statements from Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes. My phone just lit up with Seattle Police sources. And I will say, I'm not going to name names, obviously, but up to and including the rank of captain that said, Brandy, we will respond to help ICE agents whose lives are in jeopardy, even if it means defying a direct order from the chief of police and even if it means sacrificing our careers. I got some version of that message from officers, from detectives, and up to and including a captain, from sergeants, who said, regardless of what our woke police chief or the mayor say, we're not going to let ICE agents die and sit back and do nothing like they did in Chicago. So it's a crazy situation. Seattle mayor absolutely manufacturing a crisis that doesn't exist here. We'll see what the National Guard does in Portland. We're going to be reaching out for comment about the breadth of their mission there and what, if anything, they'll be doing differently than the agents that we see there night after night. And hey, maybe the agents just need a break. I can see that after 4.5 months, I can see that they are worn out and maybe they just need a break and the National Guard can come in and give them a break. But as long as they're confined to protecting federal agents and assets, that's lawful. Mayor Bruce Harrell brought up the 10th Amendment. So, of course, rights not specifically given to the federal government are left to the states. They say that the president isn't specifically given the right to deploy National Guard troops, and that's not true. And even the Ninth Circuit said that that's not true. And so, I don't know. The mayor is not very smart, obviously, and he, because it's mean-spirited, thinks that laws shouldn't apply and court precedent shouldn't apply. Meanwhile, as Seattle's mayor takes the side of far-left Antifa lunatics over law and order, we know that there are going to be some direct actions from Antifa right here in the Seattle area, and I imagine Portland is as well going to respond. Antifa there is going to respond in kind over the weekend. But this flyer was posted by at Dr. Carolyn B. She covers the far left across America. It says, F ICE, F prisons, F Israel, F the state. Mischief night means fight back. So they're planning a quote unquote mischief night the day before Halloween, 7 p.m. Block up for autonomous direct action. Meet near Volunteer Park, which is, of course, the site of the former autonomous zone from 2020. And when they say block up, that means black block. So for those who either don't believe Antifa exists or aren't familiar with it, that literally means head to toe black, cover your identity, put a mask on, you know, get your gas masks on and block up for a direct action. That means that they are going to commit crimes. That means they're going to break things and hurt people. And they're going to do it allegedly on 10:30. Why isn't Mayor Bruce Harrell putting out a video about that? He's the mayor of the city and you have Antifa thugs literally telling you time, place. I mean, they literally put those GPS coordinates. Yeah, here's the GPS coordinates to meet by the water tower at Volunteer Park. Literally saying we're going to block up for direct action. So we know this is for sure happening on October 30th at 7:30 p.m. And you have the literal GPS location of it. But the mayor is putting out a video about something President Trump might do in Seattle that he hasn't even suggested he's going to do. It's wild. Something else happened over the weekend. I was going to talk about it yesterday, but we had a jam-packed show already. So, of course, the No Kings protest things was going on, and I was at the one in Seattle. Also happening over the weekend, there was an anarchist book fair in Seattle, and I'd been alerted to this. It was at a location in Seattle. It had been publicized, and so members of the public could just walk in. But they wanted people who they don't like to know that if they just walked in, they might be met with violence, assaults, vandalism of cameras, whatever it is. So this was on the wall. Okay, guys, I need you just to understand the craziness of this. Anarchist book fair. Doesn't that sound nice? No, but on the wall, they had posters with the faces of people who they hate. And I'm kind of sad because my face isn't up there. And I'm like, do I? You know, it's because I'm so charming. even they like me, you know, or, you know, just my hair is too good. And they're like, we can't put her up there because people will see the picture and just immediately be like, wow,
maybe
great
you
hair.
You need a bikini photo like that guy.
Yes. But it's a mix of people who they say are Proud Boys, our friend Jonathan Cho, a couple independent journalists are up there. It's a hit wall. I mean, it reminds me of like the FBI's most wanted wall, like with it's full of terrorists mm-hmm. that they're trying to hunt down. So this is a threat. Anyone on that wall should take that as a threat. And then it had on the door, and keep in mind, these are people who characterize themselves as anarchists, which means they're like against rule and order and law. They have a really long list there of rules for entry, mm-hmm. don't they? I'll get to the fine print in a moment, but it says community. So it says Seattle Anarchist Book Fair 2025 welcomes your consent to the following. Community conduct agreements. One, this is an unsafe space for bigots. Do what you need to do. Okay. Two, but no punching inside the Vera Project, which is the nonprofit that hosted them in this space. Washington is a mutual combat state. The Vera Project ends at the doors. So basically saying, if you see a bigot, do what you need to do, but take it outside, okay? No video, photography, or auditory recording without consent. Wear a mask. Masks are provided for free at the front welcome desk. Bodily autonomy requires bodily safety. This is a very, very crowded space. Elders and children can be easily crushed, knocked down, or impacted. Let's all practice physical awareness to safeguard our most vulnerable. It's a book fair. What are you talking about? And then yield the path to persons using me, blah, blah, blah. Okay, autonomous enforcement guidelines. If you see somebody doing some foul shit, confront them. If you think someone needs an effing punch to the face, punch them, but do it outside. We have a pro-smashing camera policy. If you see someone recording, filming, or taking pictures without consent or refusing to stop when asked, don't go find an organizer, smash that shit. So they're basically saying, if you enter, by entering this space, you consent to follow and enforce the community guidelines. The Seattle Anarchist Book Fair organizers are not your personal police force and refuse to become one. So you have a Seattle Anarchist Book Fair being hosted at the Vera Project that has posters on the wall of people who I really think is a hit list, who they would want to like punch on sight, which is funny because four people on that wall were able to walk in with just simple face coverings and get some pictures completely undetected. So obviously they're not too bright or really on the lookout for them. But then they're saying that they condone physical assault and breaking cameras if people are recording. Like, what is happening at the book fair that you'd be so worried about being recorded or photographed that you would say smash cameras on site? And then Bennett Hasselton, who's one of the people on the wall, which is so funny because Bennett's a leftist. He like goes out to some of these protests and often like, I think, kind of trolls conservatives. But he also has called out Antifa for its clear violent tendencies. So they put him up on this wall and called him a fascist, which is hilarious. And it just shows how loosely they use the phrase fascist. So he zoomed in on the fine print. By entering this space, you agree to the terms and conditions above, including should you choose to engage in bigoted behavior, hate speech, or other associated activity, your implicit consent to engage in mutual combat at the time of that activity with any and all other persons present, and absolve the Seattle Anarchist Book Fair, the Vera Project, and other persons attending this event from liability or loss arising from said activity. So they're claiming that if you enter and you anger someone because, I don't know, maybe you're a face on that wall, then they have a right to beat you down and you can't sue them over it. Just wild. Yeah, these are, and this is the stuff that's happening in the city of Seattle under Mayor Bruce Harrell's nose while he is fear-mongering about President Donald Trump. It's really quite disgusting. So on that note, if you watch Sundays with Subscribers this week, our exclusive in-depth interview show on Sundays for Subscribers, we had on Andy Ngo, who really is the godfather of covering Antifa. He quite literally wrote the book on it, his book Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. Andy lived in Portland. He was twice assaulted, almost killed by Antifa, and ended up having to move out of the country to escape the threats against his life. He was on the Antifa roundtable panel with me at the White House. And this Antifa tactic of breaking cameras and stopping people from documenting their criminal conduct is something that came up on the Sunday show with Andy. And the fact that it isn't just, you know, people like me or Andy Ngo or Jonathan Cho or Katie Davis Cord who are targeted and assaulted and have these people attempt to stop our ability to record. It is even mainstream journalists who for some reason continue to downplay it.
There have been so many journalists who work in legacy liberal media who have been attacked over the years. I've seen it.
Yeah.
KATU, there was a journalist there. And there have been other journalists who have reached out to me privately to tell me about what happened to them and how their news editors above did not allow them to publicize or to post a video of what happened. Even Taylor Lorenz, at one point when she was covering some Antifa demonstration years ago before she became the figure she is today, was attacked. And then she later ended up deleting that video from her ex. For a while, it remained up. But it's like these journalists either stay silent or they're not allowed to speak out. Or some of them are afraid that if they bring attention to what happened to them, then it will invite further violence against them. And so it's not the behavior of the journalists that's the variable here. You can, just the presence of being there with a camera is seen as a provocation and agitation worthy of violence, ultra violence even sometimes. So I want people to understand that, and that the Portland police, particularly one officer in a position of leadership, doesn't understand that by now. That is what is so disturbing.
Yeah, it's also one of the things that makes it even more disgusting that the mainstream and legacy media continues to downplay left-wing extremism, because I have seen them with my own eyes assault it and then hide it or downplay it or act like it wasn't a big deal. So when they ignore it or downplay it, they do it at the peril of their own reporters and crews out in the field. They make it more likely that the next time their reporter is out or their videographer is out, that they're going to be assaulted. Because they cover for the behavior of these extreme leftist agitators. And so they get emboldened to continue to do it. So it's really quite a disgusting thing. If you want to watch my full interview, it's about an hour long with Andy Ngo. Really appreciate it. I mean, he knows more about Antifa than anyone else, I would argue, probably in the world. Go to undividedpod.com, become a paid subscriber, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. We would love to have you, and hope that you enjoy those long form Sunday interviews that we do on Sundays with subscribers. All right. Coming up next, it looks like former Republican Attorney General candidate Pete Serrano is going to be pushed out of his nomination as the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Washington. Livid over this. We'll discuss the details of it first. All right. It is that time of the year. Weather will be incoming, I suppose. It's so weird because in Minnesota, by now there's snow on the ground where I grew up. So I'm always used to it. I was like, weird, there's no snow for Halloween? But you never know. You know, you get the rain, snow comes. So the question is, if you're a homeowner, how is your roof holding up? If you already know that you need to replace your roof, I would highly recommend, as soon as you can, reaching out to our friends at Valentine Roofing. And they'll come in and just do a free assessment. And here's the best part. If your roof can be repaired, maybe there's just a part of it where there's an issue causing a leak. They're not going to try to push you into a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, you know it's time. If it's leaking now, for instance, Valentine offers a free leak stop. They'll make sure the leaks are fixed, so there's no damage that happens, then they'll replace your roof. They even offer zero down financing from those projects, so you can get the work done now and pay over time, which is also great. And by the way, Valentine does more than just roofing. If you need new siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, you can expect the same great service from our friends at Valentine Roofing. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, 206-ROOFING, and please tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right. So as you know, and I celebrated this because I think he's just the perfect fit. So Pete Serrano, who's been great at going after defending 2A issues and defending family rights, he ran for Attorney General of the state of Washington in 2024. He didn't win. Not a surprise. We have no Republicans left in statewide elected office on the entire West Coast. But he really showed, I think, he's a champion for not even conservatism. Just a champion for the Constitution and common sense. So he loses that election, but then he gets nominated to be the next United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Washington out of Spokane. And we were like rejoicing because I really wanted him to end up in some position where he could really make a difference. Then enters Senator Patty Murray, who's been in the United States Senate, I think longer than I've been alive almost. And she decided that she was going to do everything that she could and will do everything she can to derail Pete Serrano's appointment and his nomination. And it's so disgusting to me, some of the rationale that she's given. And we talked about this on the show when she first brought it up, you know, that he's not in line with, again, this Washington's values. It's like, first of all, he wasn't nominated as the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Washington, which isn't Seattle. He was nominated for the Eastern District of Washington, which it encompasses a very red area of the state. So, in fact, yes, he is more in line with their values than you are in line with their values. And so she's trying to put, I don't know, the values of Seattleites on the values of the Eastern District of Washington. It makes no sense. But she's just a sour woman who just is going to throw a temper tantrum until she gets her way. And unfortunately, there is a pretty simple tactic for her to be able to successfully derail Pete Serrano's nomination, and it's something called a blue slip. This is from our friends at Seattle Red. Washington Senator Patty Murray is now deploying the Senate's archaic blue slip tradition in an effort to block President Trump's nominee, Pete Serrano, from being confirmed as U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Washington. The move has prompted fierce criticism from conservatives, particularly given Murray's past rhetoric about defending democracy while denying a president the right to make his appointments. Serrano currently serves as interim U.S. attorney, so he's in the role right now, but only in a temporary interim capacity. They can only hold that post for him for 120 days, and that's coming up on timing out because he was appointed in August 2025. So they only have 120 days to make the confirmation permanent, and that does not seem like it's going to happen. Murray has publicly vowed to use every legislative tool to block his confirmation. In her statement, Murray criticized Serrano's political and legal record. Quote, Pete Serrano has tried to rewrite the history of the violent January 6th insurrection, thinks the Supreme Court overturning Roe was the right decision, and has fought in court to unleash dangerous assault weapons on our streets, she said. His extreme right-wing views are far out of step with the people of Washington State, and I will be using every legislative tool I have to block his confirmation. So let's talk about this tool. It's called a blue slip. The blue slip practice, dating back over a century, gives home state senators de facto veto power over federal judicial or U.S. attorney nominations in their states. The Senate Judiciary Committee sends a colored form, the blue slip, to each senator in the relevant state. If a senator refuses to return it or returns it with a negative opinion, the Judiciary Committee traditionally will not advance that nomination. And unfortunately, there's really not a lot of ways around that. And it's such a, think about this, especially in today's political environment, it makes no sense. The two sides are so divided, refuse to work together, refuse to do anything that would seemingly benefit the other side. So what? Why would a senator ever allow a president of the opposite party to choose a U.S. attorney? Why? They would just, and I think this is going to start to happen, they'll just say no every time. So if you're a Republican president, you're not going to be able to get any U.S. attorneys that you like seated in blue states. And vice versa, if you're the shoe can be on the other foot. And that's what I think Senator Patty Murray isn't realizing, that if you abuse this process, then Republican senators should abuse it too. Frankly, they should. And if there's a Democratic president, which I don't think will happen for the next like 3 decades, but if there's a Democratic president, I do believe that in retaliation for this, it's only fair that the senators in red states should blue slip every U.S. attorney nomination that comes to them. I just don't see any other way around it. I mean, the practice should be done away with in this political environment. Maybe there was a time in American politics where people weren't so petty and they realized, like, hey, he won the presidency. He has a right to choose his U.S. attorneys across the country. And when we get the presidency back, our president has a right to choose his U.S. attorneys. You know, at a different time, you might have a senator for a particular state. I think the idea was basically that, you know, they might know something about this nominee or have some, you know, valid reasons as being the person who represents that state, that this isn't the right person for the state, and they would use it so sparingly. But now it's just going to be used on everyone. And even President Donald Trump has seemed to resign himself to the reality that Democratic senators are not going to approve a lot of these appointments. He said a blue slip means that if you're a Republican president and there happens to be just one Democrat senator in a state where you were appointing a U.S. attorney or district court judge, you will never be successful in getting a Republican confirmed. In other words, blue slips are a disaster, and I have 8 great Republican U.S. attorney candidates who will not be able to fulfill their service to the people of a state that voted overwhelmingly for me. The only one, well, you know, they didn't vote overwhelmingly for him here, but the only one I can appoint is a Democrat, and that's not the deal. Nobody can say that's fair or even constitutional. Thank you for your attention to this matter. And he's right. And if, I mean, fast forward, let's say that there's a Democrat back in the White House in 4 years and Republican senators decide that turnabout is fair game and they're going to do this. You don't think that they're going to lose their minds over it? Of course they are. Whoever the next Democratic president is, when this is done to them, they'll lose their mind over it. Even Senator Patty Murray will cry foul and you can't do this. But so I don't know if there's any way around it. And it's such a shame because, you know, I think Pete would do great in that role, especially getting into some of these government contracts and waste, fraud and abuse. So we'll see what happens and who gets a nod after Pete Serrano. Maybe someone more palatable to Her Majesty, Senator Murray.
Well, so is that what you do, is just put somebody in place for 120 days?
I mean, until you can get someone they're willing. For instance, Senator Murray or Senator Cantwell have not, to the best of my knowledge, objected to the choice for United States Attorney in the Western District of Washington. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because I didn't even know him. He's like an immigration judge. He's from a different state entirely. It was kind of an odd pick, but I've heard good things about him. But they couldn't like have some sort of objection to that because he was a sitting judge in another state. Mm-hmm. They don't know him. They have no background with him. So it made it more difficult. But is he going to be the fighter that someone like Pete Serrano would be? So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I guess they'll try someone else and see if Patty Murray is willing to blue slip him again. All right. Coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, an EBT trafficking ring has been disrupted in Seattle. It preyed on the homeless and drug addicted. We'll get into it first. A lot happening with the global economy, a lot happening nationally. I saw some headlines about there's some indicators that are very similar to what was happening in 1929 before the stock market crash. Now, whether you believe that or not, if you're worried about your retirement portfolio, now's a good time just to get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Zach and his team specialize in managing risk to the extent possible, and that's what he can talk to you about. And I think the lens through which he's going to look at your portfolio. So he'll do his free risk assessment, share the basic fundamentals of value investing that they believe in at Bulwark, give you a perspective on the months ahead, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. Yes, I am drinking a pumpkin spice latte. No, I don't care if that makes me a basic B. And no, this segment is not brought to you by Starbucks. I've told Nicole before the show, maybe I should just turn it and you can't. There you go. No free ads for Starbucks. But, you know, it's a pumpkin spice latte and it's delicious, okay? I don't need your judgment, all right?
The calories.
Occasionally, I deserve it, okay? I deserve it. All right. Can we get to our segment?
I can.
Unbelievable. Thanks. Unbelievable. Brandy's drinking a pumpkin spice latte. Usually I just do two shots of espresso. So this is very different for me. I'm usually just two shots of espresso right in my veins. But this is nice change. This is not a surprising story, but I'm actually, so I think the surprise for me is that the Seattle Police Department investigated it and made arrests, so that they were allowed to investigate anything even remotely related to drugs and homelessness. This from our friends at the Post Millennial, our friend Ari Hoffman. Seattle police uncover EBT trafficking ring exploiting homeless and drug addicted. The defendants are driving an illicit marketplace in which people who are addicted to drugs can readily sell food benefits for cash. Says the Seattle Police Department has dismantled a multi-group crime ring accused of exploiting homeless and drug-addicted residents in the Chinatown International District by trafficking electronic benefit transfer EBT cards, a scheme that detectives say funneled food stamp benefits into illicit cash and drug trades across Seattle, across King and Snohomish counties. Definitely interesting. In one scheme, suspects used EBT cards to buy food and household goods, paying cardholders cash worth roughly 50% of the item's value before reselling the goods to restaurants, businesses, and private buyers. In another version, suspects purchased entire EBT cards, often $200 balances, for $100 in cash, along with PIN codes, then used them directly for bulk purchases. So you've got homeless people, drug addicts on the street. They've got EBT. What do they want more than the EBT and what it can buy? Drugs. So you have people come in, give them half of what the value is of the EBT card, and then they go out and they profit off of these people's addiction. And that's sad, in despair. But it's really not a surprise. You know, none of this stuff is monitored. It's one of the reasons why we need more rules and regulations. And I hate to ever advocate for more rules and regulations. But this is taxpayer money, right? And it's being used in a roundabout way to fund people's drug habits and to fund crime. And there has to be something that we can do about that. So there was a couple of arrests made. The investigation revealed an alarming overlap between food benefit trafficking and narcotic sales. According to a Seattle police captain, officers found that narcotics sellers were aware of the EBT schemes and that the addicted people now had cash on hand. So they just freaking pounced. They're like, yep, EBT scheme came through. Now all these drug addicts have cash. They, the drug dealers, would then be in the area selling narcotics to take advantage of the influx of cash. King County prosecutors have filed felony charges against two of the alleged ringleaders, Ha Son Thoch, 54, and Lin Mai Ku, 50, who were both charged with five counts of unlawful trafficking in food stamps. How long do you think they stayed behind bars on that one, you guys? Anyone? Anyone? Yeah, you probably guessed. Thatch's bail was set at $10,000 following his first court appearance, which I'm sure he paid for with some ill-gotten gains and got right out. Ku was released on personal recognizance, despite prosecutors requesting $5,000 bail. Both defendants scheduled for arraignment on October 22nd, so that's tomorrow in King County Superior Court. Yep, you can go out there, prey on the homeless, prey on the drug addicted, be involved in drug trafficking operations, and a judge will just say, come back. They're not going to come back. Let's see if they even make it back to court tomorrow. It's pretty absurd. All right, a little double dose of unbelievable. What do you say? Okay. Look, I'm all for people knowing their rights, okay? I think everybody should know their rights, but I'm not in favor of any taxpayer-funded entity trying to disrupt ICE operations, and we've seen an awful lot of that. I mean, our attorney general right now is pushing a law that he'll officially introduce this coming legislative session that would require businesses give illegals working for them a heads up if ICE is going to come and inspect I-9s. I don't know how that's legal. I don't think that's legal. I'm sure the federal government will sue over it. But no entity that operates with taxpayer funds should be able to use those funds in a roundabout way to thwart any sort of law enforcement activity or any sort of law enforcement effort. But that's exactly what's happening at Eastern Washington University. This is in Ellensburg, right?
No, that's Central.
Central, that's right.
Eastern is in...
What town is Eastern in? Sorry.
It's in Cheney.
Cheney, okay, yes. I always confuse them all. So Eastern Washington University, which this is not a super blue area of the state. It sort of disturbs me. Mm-hmm. So we got an email from a staff member at Eastern Washington University and basically said, hey, there is an effort here to make sure that ICE can't carry out any sort of immigration activities, not only on campus, but off campus relating to students and staff members, professors, etc. So one of the things that this staff member told us is they were given, first of all, strict instructions, don't speak with immigration. So the school, which benefits from federal tax dollars, is giving staff, faculty and staff, strict instructions, you're not to communicate with ICE whatsoever in any capacity. So that's number one. And then they were given these cards that they were directed, according to our source, to hand out to students. So, and it's so interesting because they got these cards and then they were supposed to cut them, cut them up themselves, and then fold them in half and then just hand them secretly to students. And it says, on one side, you have constitutional rights. Do not open the door if an immigration agent is knocking at the door. Do not answer any questions from an immigration agent if they try to talk to you. Do not sign anything without first speaking to a lawyer. If you are outside of your home, ask the agent if you are free to leave. And if they say yes, leave calmly. Give this card to the agent. If you are inside of your home, show the card through the window or slide it under the door. And then it has some little blurbs that they can say to the ICE agent. I do not wish to speak with you, answer your questions, or sign or hand you any documents based on my Fifth Amendment rights under the United States Constitution. I do not give you permission to enter my home based on my Fourth Amendment rights under the United States Constitution unless you have a warrant to enter signed by a judge or magistrate with my name on it and you slide it under the door. I do not give you permission to search any of my belongings based on my Fourth Amendment rights. I choose to exercise my constitutional rights. So first of all, again, I think knowing your constitutional rights is great, but a taxpayer-funded university having faculty members print these out, cut them out, fold them in half, hand them to students to help them avoid, if they're in the country illegally, deportation is absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane. I don't even know how it's lawful. The other thing that we were told, and we're trying to get our hands on the email for this, that they sent an email asking to be notified if ICE is spotted on or near campus. So staff members got an email from the university saying, if you spot ICE on or even near campus, you need to let us know. Presumably, so they can send out an alert of some kind saying ICE is nearby, so illegals can what, have time to flee? So it's directly interfering with federal immigration efforts.
I believe that went to
totally
all
inappropriate
campus. So I believe that went to students as well.
So students as well. Yep.
Let the campus know.
Let the campus know if ICE agents are nearby. Again, they act like ICE agents are doing something illegal or like they're doing something that they weren't doing under the Biden administration. Biden has still deported more people than Trump. I think Trump will probably surpass that here in the next 3 years. But they weren't losing their mind like this while Biden and Obama were deporting people. It's all about Trump, and now Trump doing it is a very, very scary thing. Now we have to use our resources. We have to alert people to the presence of ICE, which could also have the effect of being creating an unsafe environment for agents, as we know. You know, these apps that were posting their locations, and then people would show up and ram their vehicles or try to stand in front of their vehicles, etc. So depending on what Eastern Washington University decides to do with that information, it actually could create a hostile environment for ICE if they put some sort of alert out saying, you know, ICE was spotted near the quad or whatever it was. So just insane. So if you work at a public institution or an institution that gets money from taxpayers and something like this is happening there, please, please let us know about it. We'd like to talk about it on the show. All right, coming up next, teenagers in Virginia are campaigning for common sense school board members. You love to see it. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. We all need insurance. It's just a fact of life. You can't get away from it. The question is, do you have the right insurance at the right price? And if you're handling your insurance needs on your own, chances are probably not. You probably tried your very best, but you might not have got, you know, insurance that will properly cover you in the event that something unthinkable happens. But just have them kind of take a second look at it. And that's what they'll do. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Go there, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. They'll go over your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs. And then they'll go out and they'll shop the market of carriers for you and come back with their recommendations. So the only thing you could do is either they say, no, your insurance is great, or you end up saving a bunch of money. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, let's get to some national news here. I love to see this. So in Virginia, in Loudoun County, Virginia, teens are doing outreach to voters, asking them specifically to vote for school board candidates who would restore girl-only and boy-only bathrooms and locker rooms in Loudoun County public schools. And I love this. I love teenagers, many of whom probably aren't even old enough to vote, going out there and advocating for themselves and saying, hey, here are the school board candidates who support our ability to be in a locker room with people only of our same sex, or to be in a space with people only of our same sex. And I think that is the most effective messenger. Here's a little clip from a report out of a local station in Virginia.
I am in support for Matt Malone. He is helping the students protect boys from coming in girls' locker rooms.
As early voting is underway, some teens are greeting Loudoun County voters and asking them to choose school board candidates who would restore girls-only and boys-only bathrooms and locker rooms in Loudoun County public schools.
It's like a sample ballot for Matt Malone.
Malone is running against incumbent April Chandler. For the past 4 years, LCPS has allowed students to use bathrooms and locker rooms at school based on their chosen gender identity and not biological sex. While some have rallied in support of the current policy, there are several students who have protested the policy in the past, which included school walkouts. But these students say the school board hasn't listened to their concerns. So they want voters to choose a new school board.
I've been sick of it for quite a while.
It's very challenging when I know that there is boys in the girls' locker rooms or even the bathrooms, which concerns me a lot.
Some Democrats want the policy to stay in place.
The message to the school board is that they should keep all kids safe, including trans kids.
Oh my God, does that sum up this issue perfectly or what? So you've got this story the kids, the literal people being impacted by these policies. A teenage girl saying, it scares me to have boys in the locker room. And they cut to a Democrat who's out there protesting, like, against the children trying to stand up for themselves. Some old boomer white lady, no offense to boomers, I know you're not all like that, who's like, they should keep the boys in the girls' locker room, who has no skin in the game, nothing. And that is just so indicative of the Democratic Party on this issue, is they will just sweep aside, you know, teenage girls trying to advocate for themselves as transphobes and bigots, and they think that they have the moral righteous position on this. No. And I do believe it makes a difference. And I would encourage teens, even if you're not old enough to vote, your voice is the most powerful voice when it comes to school board races in your communities. You know, for parents, talk to your teens. If you have a teen who you know is really passionate about this issue in particular, I know it can be a difficult one to speak out about, but maybe it's something where they want to do some sign waving. There's nothing that stops you, even if you're not old enough to vote, from going out and doing some sign waving for a candidate or going door to door for a candidate with an adult. Obviously, I would encourage you to have an adult with you going door to door or running a phone bank. There's a million things. When I was in college, I was a Democratic Senate candidate. I apologize for that. But I did some sign waving and some door to door, and I was very passionate about it. And it was a good experience and a good memory for me. And so I think specifically on school board races, since you're not old enough to vote, unfortunately, for the people who are going to be on your school board, which maybe is something we should reconsider, go out there and do something to support candidates who have your best interest in mind. All right, really quickly, since we're talking about insanity in education, Oregon State University is making students take a class on white supremacy. And what I think is really interesting about this one, because we see stories like this all the time, it's a computer science class on white supremacy. What is so white supremacist about computer science? Says the class features reading assignments using woke books such as White Rage and The Case for Reparations. It also features an entire module on white supremacy in the U.S. And that school, by the way, Oregon State University, received $370 million in federal funding in 2024. Libs of TikTok says, investigate and defund. And also, what do any of those things have to do with computer science? Literally. And I saw White Rage, and the first thing I thought of were all the white ragey people at the No Kings protest on Saturday. Like, that's white rage. That lady just yelling about keeping boys in girls' locker rooms, that's white rage. What is white rage exactly? Have I demonstrated white rage on this show before?
I mean, I don't believe so.
Somebody tell me what that looks like, because I feel like I saw a lot of it on Saturday at No Kings, but maybe it's only conservative white people who can have rage. I don't know. And maybe I need to take this class at Oregon State University to really get to the bottom of it. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll, which is about this school board candidate issue and what you're specifically looking for in a school board candidate. First, the day is almost... Wait a second. Holy smokes. I am just getting... dangerously close to my RHA conference appearance. I'm going to be at the Engage conference at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. My panel specifically is on Thursday. Don't worry, we're not missing the show. I'm going to go there, do my thing in the morning, come back. I'll tell you all about it. But I'm going to be on a panel with Alex Fryer, Jonathan Cho. We're going to be talking about how the media covers housing issues. So that's everything from rent control to the homeless crisis and the housing issues around the homeless crisis, et cetera. So our panel is Thursday morning. There's still time to join us for that. And there's a ton of other speakers and panels going on if you're kind of a political wonk or nerd that you like. So go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org to sign up. There is still time. And while you're there, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, you can become a member of RHA today. rhawa.org, rhawa.org. That can help you navigate this complex world we're in, this complex climate. All right,
I just looked more into this white rage thing. Kay. So apparently white rage is the idea that you, like someone who's white, opposes black progress. So it's not an actual emotion. I suppose it could be coupled with an emotion, but they, it's a white reaction
to that black has progress,
rolled back black gains.
Okay, mm-hmm. It's exhausting.
Yeah. I'm sure that's real. Yeah. it's exhausting for students to hear about.
All right. Our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. I asked you guys, what quality matters the most to you when you are considering voting for a school board candidate? And of course, if you live in Washington State, for instance, your ballots will already probably be on your kitchen counters. And so you might have some school board races on there. So which matters most? Their approach to budgeting, their views on things like politics and gender, or their plan for academic outcomes? Nicole?
I'm going to say the views on politics and gender, because I think that that will easily tell you what the other, or like encompass what the other two things
That's a have. Very good point. That's a very good point.
Or where they signal those other two things.
Yeah, because if you support boys and girls sports,
then you don't care.
I already know that you're not going to budget well and you don't care about academics.
Exactly.
Man, that's a good point, Nicole. I was going to say something else, but now I agree with you. I'm going to go with views on politics and gender. For subscribers, 80% saying that their plan for improved academic outcomes matters the most. Pink says, I couldn't possibly choose one of those. All three are very important. Those aren't the rules, Pink. Those aren't the rules. Why? Someone who genuinely cares about children learning academics and skills needed to go out into the world. Politics and gender craze should stay out of school. I agree, in a perfect environment. But right now, it's not a perfect environment.
See, if your view on gender is keep your ideology out of school, then you're probably focused more on academic outcomes and paying attention to the budget.
100%.
Needs.
Mountain Mama says plans for improved academic outcomes mean nothing if they're more interested in indoctrinating our children with their political views and gender equality issues. Once you take those out of the equation, then and only then can you focus on academics and teaching our children academics and life skills so they can learn to be successful in our future generation. I agree. I mean, one does sort of undercut the other if you focus on it too much. All right. I got a couple more comments on here. Hold on a second. I just pulled my page. Let's see. Juniet Werps. I'm currently a candidate for the Battleground School Board. The number one job of a public school is to provide an excellent education for our kids. The second priority in doing so while being fiscally responsible. Every other program or action should reflect priority one and two. I agree. Mm-hmm. I wish I knew if that was your real full name, because I'd give you a shout out for Battleground School Board, but I only have your persona. Let's see. I'll do one more here. Greg, academics is the main focus with budget as a complementary priority. We must teach the right age appropriate basics, not a bunch of gender woke crap, with the right focus, reading, writing, math, history, science, etc. Budget should become reasonable and optimized. I agree. And they do all certainly go together, right? If you're focused on the right things, your budget will be focused in the right place and academic outcomes will improve. All right, let's get to some comments and then we'll go into our closing sanity check. I missed one super chat that came in real late on the show yesterday. Allison Griffin, do you ever think of stopping reporting at protests because of how scary it is getting? Oh, yeah, for sure. And I've said, like, I'm too old for this. But so I'm not going out all the time. Like, I, you know, have priorities. We are here. We do live shows during the week. I'm not going to be able to make a full-time job of going out and covering riots and protests. I think nor do I necessarily need to. But when it makes sense, I'll go. Like, this was, you know, No Kings was Saturday during the day. I have security with me. And so I'm not too particularly concerned. And so I always tell Nicole, it's always like, is the juice worth the squeeze? Like, what are we going to get out of it that we won't get out of it if I don't go? Because there's always opportunity. Like in Portland, do I need to be in Portland right now? There's like every conservative influencer and independent journalist and stuff is on the ground in Portland. I probably will go back to Portland at some point, maybe to see what the National Guard deployment looks like. But I don't always need to go. But yeah, safety is always a concern. And yeah, our security budget is going to be blown blown to smithereens this year. But yeah. All right. National Guard court ruling they can go into Portland. Crafty Grandma Crispy, the Portland Police Department has failed its citizens. I agree. And I know so many of them want to do the right thing, but they're handcuffed. And if they were controlling the streets, the feds wouldn't have to. That's the bottom line. And which is why I do believe that Democrats want Donald Trump to send the troops in. Because it's such a convenient distraction for them to all the crises that they've made worse that they don't want people focusing on and paying attention to. So Donald Trump coming to Portland or Seattle is the best thing for those mayors. They absolutely are begging for it.
All of these stupid polls keep saying that anytime they mention Trump, it's a good thing. So they just want to keep talking about him.
Yeah, 100%.
Because they cannot talk about anything that they've done that is worth talking about.
No, and even when he's out of office, if you think that they're going to stop talking about him, no, they'll compare every Republican after him to Donald Trump, and they will. The next Republican president will be as great a threat to democracy as Donald Trump was, because this is what has allowed them to get away with destroying their own states and their voters still putting them back in office. It's really quite disgusting when you think about it. Ollie Sasquatch, the military is obligated to protect its citizens and property from all foreign and domestic threats. It's not federal overreach to uphold the laws of this country. Let's see.
YouTube's doing the
holo. YouTube sometimes is weird because, it's weird. Democrats have always disrespected the intelligence of their constituents. I have to agree. Jules J on Antifa Mischief Night. This always happens under Trump. The crazies come out to disrupt and distract from the good work Trump is doing for America. Sick of it. On the Anarchist Book Fair, Matt M. Sounds like a lovely evening out with the tolerant left. Yeah. Chris Parker, Book Fair. I wonder what kind of books they will have there. And I don't think the book club will have tea and cookies while discussing Moby Dick. I should have pulled this. If I remember tomorrow, I'll do it. They had a kids section at the book fair.
Oh, no.
That somebody was taking videos of, and it was vile. Vile, violent. And there's this weird intersection between transgenderism and Antifa.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we call them, like, if the media hates us talking about Antifa, wait till we start talking about Trantifa. Because that is a real, real thing. There's a reason why, like, 90% of the people arrested on federal charges outside the ICE facility in Portland have been transgender.
Mm-hmm.
Something going on there. So,
yeah, Brandy, you're a bigot.
Whatever. Don't even care anymore.
People full of testosterone. They get angry.
Right. Yeah. You pump chicks full of test, and it's like, now I'm all in a rage, you know?
Yeah. I mean, hormonal imbalance is something 100%. Everyone struggles with. And you're always trying to keep this balance. And then we are just like, let's shoot these kids up with hormones and throw off their bodies and see what happens.
It's like one of the best. Why do you think women are bitchy when they're pregnant or on their period? We are. Yeah. That's hormones. Why our hormones are all over the place. That's why we're raging bitches during those periods of time.
Yeah.
But if my husband ever brings up, oh, you must be on your period, I will absolutely disown him. So you're not allowed to say that. But just know that we know it's true, okay? Just know that we know that we're hard to deal with during these times of the month, but you're not allowed to say that, okay? All right. On the EBT trafficking ring, exploiting the homeless, Midnight says, this is why we need drug tests for EBT. I don't hate that idea. I gotta be honest. I don't hate that idea.
Interesting.
On EWU handing out ICE red cards, I cannot read your username. It's too complicated. Something 5589. This could be obstruction or dispensing legal advice without a license. There you go. Are you not allowed to dispense legal advice without a license? Is that a thing?
Dispense legal advice without a license. Well, yeah, I guess, because don't you have to give disclaimers if you're like, this is not legal advice.
This is not legal advice. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. Let's see. On the Virginia Teens Campaigning for Common Sense School Board Members, Native Wars says, God bless America's youth that ain't woke. That does give me faith for the future generation. It really does. I do think that we just got to wait a little longer. This is going to sound mean, but I'm going to say it. We got to wait a little longer for a certain segment to age out. And then some of these younger kids who are tired of all this nonsense to age in to voting. Yeah,
and hopefully we haven't destroyed their brains with extra hormones.
I know. Crazy. A couple of super chats to get to. Space Cowboy. I'm from Cheney, grew up here. EWU has been becoming extremely radicalized over the last few years. I've personally seen this school brainwash one of my best friends. Thank you for bringing attention to this. So that's very interesting. Thank you for that insight. Big Princess 9595. I just think of like a fat princess, you know, in a suit or something. I think of like the men who they're hiring as princesses at Disneyland, like Disney princesses, and it's like trans, it's like men, but they're trans.
I don't know so why like, my brain went to Mario Brothers.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. I'm just thinking of that viral clip that's been going around of that Disney princess with a mustache. I'm like, hi, kids.
Scary.
Oh, Brandy, be nice. Brandy, remember how the left used lawfare to go after Trump, yet now all the media and politicians are screaming that Trump is using the DOJ to go after political opponents? That's the thing is, again, you get into this slippery slope, and I feel both ways about it. Is like, you just got to imagine, how would I feel if a Democratic president did this? How would I feel if a Republican president did this? And try to, if you can, have enough self-awareness to do that.
But then at the same time, like, don't break the laws.
Right. Yes.
Don't break the laws. Don't send your wife and your kid confidential documents. Mm-hmm. Don't, like these mm-hmm. people have done things they knew they shouldn't do. It's just that not many people have gotten prosecuted or like gotten taken to task for them. And yeah. Now they are.
Milkman89 says, Bill Kirk for U.S. attorney. That'll get blue slipped in a second. But Bill Kirk, of course, famous for being a 2A attorney. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will be Patty Murray will spoil herself running fast to submit her blue slip. It'll be something
else. I
love she'll run her, right out of her sneakers.
All of her reasons were like constitutional.
Crazy. Like, yeah.
Argumented.
I meant spoil herself. Oh. I'm out of control today, so we need to hurry up here. Let's see. Moon Goddess, $2 super chat. Coffee fund for all of us basic bitches. Catherine Erex, what is the best email to speak with Brandy or Nicole? Do you answer your emails? Info for a government story. Go to undividedpod.com and just submit a tip. Make sure you say submit a tip.
There's
and
we'll different get that. Options. So submit a tip or comment or whatever it is.
Yep, 100%. All right, good stuff. Nicole, thank you.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right, with that, I can't get to sanity check until she leaves. We'll get to our closing sanity check. So I said that I really do believe West Coast leaders care more about illegal aliens than they do law-abiding citizens. And I would like to have an opportunity at some point to just pose a question to Governor Bob Ferguson or Attorney General Nick Brown. Like, who matters more to you, a citizen of Washington State or an illegal alien? And just to put them on the spot to answer that question. But down in LA, LA Mayor Karen Bass doesn't seem to have a problem just admitting what we know to be true.
We know that this has impacted undocumented immigrants who in Los Angeles are Angelenos because we don't make the distinction. They are neighbors and workers contributing to our city, and they continue to be swept up in these actions, denied their rights, and subjected to fear and uncertainty without legal protection.
In LA, we don't make the distinctions. You might say, oh, Brandy, that just means they treat everyone the same. No, by treating illegals the same as citizens, you are giving them special treatment in prioritizing them ahead of law-abiding citizens of your state. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I think I'm going to be on Jesse Waters primetime tonight, so enjoy that. Unless they cancel on me. Sometimes they cancel at the last minute, so that'll be depressing. But
stay tuned.
Not even sure really what I'm talking about. I'm sure it'll be fun, though. That's it. We would love for you to support the show. I know there's some people just hangers on. It's just $5 a month. It's how our show continues to grow. UndividedPOD.com. UndividedPOD.com. Now's a great time because you can go watch that hour-long interview with Andy Ngo. He's just so fascinating and everything he knows about what's happening with Antifa. So UndividedPOD.com. While you're there, shop our merch store. Get an Undivided tote. Get a hat. Get a bumper sticker to trigger your neighbors. Get an extra bumper sticker for when your neighbors rip it off. UndividedPod.com, hit shop. I think that's it. We'll see you tomorrow back here. Same time, same place.